You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Justin Deschamps. Justin is the author and editor of the blog Stillness in the Storm. The Stillness in the Storm show and blog is an ongoing conversation about world events, hidden truths, and empowering information, how our thoughts, emotions, and actions mold our collective reality. It offers a different perspective than mainstream media with practical knowledge, news on health and wellness, alternative history, science, law, and much more. Justin is also involved with the subject of disclosure and exposure of the hidden system of control and domination, which is often referred to as the Matrix. His blog covers a vast range of underground subjects, which he provides links for so that you can research each topic personally. It's one of the best blogs available today, so let's welcome him back to the show now. Hi, Justin, how are you?
Hey there, it's good to be back.
Good. Did you survive 9/23?
I did. I think we're okay. We've still got a couple here hours left yet here in the East Coast, but I think we'll be all right.
All right. Well, I guess that's, I kind of figured that was what was going to happen. But you never know. You know, people have been wearing cardboard signs on their backs for dozens of years saying it's the end of the world. One of these days, they'll just happen to be right.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, got to be wary of these things.
Well, you must especially be informed about that, because it does seem that there is a cornucopia of different and various groups working together and against each other on every level mm-hmm. imaginable. I was just reading one of your articles on is the disclosure we're reaching a climax? And it's about government spending and stuff. And
sure.
I mean, it would just anger the most patient person in the world to read it. But I mean, it's common knowledge, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think you're talking about the latest David Wilcock that just got put out. And in it, David had covered the infamous $100 toilet seats and $250 hammers and things like this. And yeah, the government spending is exorbitant. I mean, one of the best psyops that the government ever played on the people was to convince them that they couldn't keep a secret, but also convince them that they couldn't balance a budget.
And right,
most
right.
people out in the world think that, you know, the government can't handle the budget. So $100 toilet seats, yeah, that sounds par for the course. Well, what a great smokescreen, because in the meantime, they're only spending 50 cents on that toilet seat, and the rest of the money goes to God knows what.
Right, and some of those items were $400,000 items, like one helmet costs that much. And,
yep.
You know, there's so much collusion between the corporations and the government and the mafia. They might as well just be one corporation, and they're throwing religion for just for fun because they're in it as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, one of the things I've discovered through my law research, which I know we were speaking last time about this, and, you know, what were some of the topics I thought really important. I mentioned law, and I know I'm sure a few people cringe, like, law, oh, my God, that sounds really dry and dusty and uninteresting. And it certainly is, you know, to a certain extent, but once you get through the initial, you know, gag reflex when it comes to law, man, do you start to get a lot of answers. And one of the answers I've discovered recently is that at the highest levels of control, you have religion basically acting as intermediaries between us and the divine, and they've asserted themselves as these quote-unquote beneficial agents of the divine, and obviously they're not so beneficial, are they?
No. Not if you look at their historical facts and what they've done to destroy, you know, civilizations.
Right. Exactly. So I mean, it's a pretty big topic. I mean, but it's something that I think maybe in the future, although I'd like to say now that, you know, the people are ready for this kind of information, but it's so comprehensive, so in-depth, and so insane that it's one of these things that even, quote-unquote, awake people have a hard time wrapping their head around.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, on that money thing, just before we segue off into another topic, I think the day before 9/11, it was Rumsfeld that announced on the television that the Pentagon was missing so many millions of dollars that just had gone missing. And ironically, I mean, it was an enormous amount of money. And of course, the next day, it just so happened that the room where the people were meeting to reconcile this strange amount of missing funds just happened to be in a wing of the Pentagon that was being refurbished and worked on, and that was the part that got blasted. So that put an end to that little research project.
Sure. Yeah, shucks, boy, but what a
darn
unfortunate thing, huh?
What an unfortunate. And then the person who owned the twin, there are actually three towers because they're not just twin towers, there was a third tower. And the person who owned it, I can't remember his name, but anyway, he insured all the buildings for just an enormous amount of money just weeks before the intentional attack, which, was supposedly done by the bankers.
Exactly. And the other another nice little data point to factor in is that we were up for a renegotiation of the, I believe it's the fourth bankruptcy of the United States at around that time. And it just so happens that 9/11 happened, which, as far as I understand, the Bretton Woods Accord Agreement was the last renegotiation of the bankruptcy that happened in 1933, and we never ended up renegotiating. And, I mean, that's a whole massive topic right there. But, yeah, there's 9/11 was a big event that covered a lot of different things.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, because we know that the shadow government or the cabal or whatever you want to call it, the Illuminati, they don't do things just for one reason. There's a laundry list of reasons why things happen, and they cover a lot of bases when they do something like a terrorist event, because all the terrorist events that I've heard of so far, according to Ole Domegaard, one of my guests who researches this stuff, have been fake. So, nobody has to believe that, but if you do your homework, you begin to question it. And he points out that there are cameras, certain cameras that they use, and, you know, how various people happen to be in these places and that to do this and do that. And it's really quite it must be a huge production team that just travels around.
I know it.
Yeah. Have you been able to get a handle on it?
As far as how they do the kind of false flag production?
Yeah.
That's a massive topic. I would say, there are some events that are just flat-out fabrications. Like, it seems like Sandy Hook was just a complete and utter fabrication. Nobody died. No kids were killed. Adam Lanza, I don't even know if that's a real person. Once you start to unpack that case, there's so many strange things, so many inconsistencies, such a profound lack of evidence to substantiate what the claims that the government provided, that the most logical conclusion to draw is that Sandy Hook was probably completely staged. But then you have different events. Some events are completely real, where people actually died, where the person who committed the attack actually believed that they were doing it for, jihad or Islam or whatever the, domestic terror, whatever the excuse is. So, but what these guys do is any event, whether it's manufactured or it just emerges, they always have a fantastic spin campaign, and they always use it to their advantage to promulgate fear look at what just happened with the hurricanes. I have a friend in Florida, and he was looking at the hurricane radar, And he said that the radar, the wind speeds were about half of what they were reporting on the news. And you ask yourself, well, why would they waste time making people fearful about hurricanes? Well, on one hand, it's a big money maker when hurricanes come through and the government says that there's going to be a big problem. Businesses make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that fear. You get people to fear. What happens when they fear? They need someone to protect them, especially if they're not competent. Well, the biggest protector, the biggest daddy to help us with our nightmares is the government. So like we were just mentioning, events will be multiple layers of PSYOP and false flag and
mm-hmm.
action all wrapped in one. So.
Mm-hmm. And that's what makes it so hard for people to hold on to the reality or to grasp it, because we're brainwashed and we're dumbed down to not really think on more than about one level, or at least two levels. That's light and dark, good or
right.
bad, you know, evil and good, and so on and so forth. And so when we're not really thinking clearly like that, we can't think outside the box. Well, that's not possible because it's not this or that. So,
right.
You know, but I think people are starting to wake up, don't you? I mean, aren't they starting to question and look for more answers?
I think so. I mean, I try to pay attention when I'm out and about in the world, you know, standing in the line waiting for a supermarket or something like that, and try to poke my ear and hear what's going on. And I hear a lot more people talking about things that, you know, 10 years ago were completely taboo, like the idea that the government is spying on us. Up before Snowden, that was like, you know, your textbook conspiracy theory. Well, now it's just public information. Now it's just an obvious fact. So it seems like slowly but surely the status quo of what we think is real is changing and becoming more truthful. What I'm not sure of, and this is where we have to do a little bit more critical thinking, is that greater availability of more truthful information translating into more empowered, well thought out, actualized, and meaningful changes in people. And you know, I don't know everybody, but I am experiencing changes, and then the people that I'm close to and I'm working with, they're going through changes. So I think it's the kind of thing where we have to honor free will, and you can't force somebody to wake up. But the people who are starting to dip their toe in the pond are starting to make some headway, I think.
Well, it seems like it's about time, because there's a lot that's been going on behind underneath our awareness. And as you know,
yep.
there are technological advances that are that rival Star Trek, and that's one that relates to the subject of money disappearing. Where does the black budget go? Well, it goes wherever they want it to go, and it's going into funding things like technologies that free energy was
right.
invented a long time ago. And so they've been perfecting that, and then, but we don't have it. And as far as we know, the world is stuck on oil. And the last that I had heard was Obama was totally behind nuclear power, which is a horrific disaster waiting to happen and extremely
yeah.
cost non-effective, and it's just plain wrong. But now we have a president that wants to go to coal, so it seems like we're going backwards. Next we'll be clicking rocks together to make sparks instead of having lighters.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Well, yeah, that's part of the whole reality management system, is we have a vision of reality that people believe in and needs to be maintained, and one of them is that, you know, we're stuck on a petroleum or coal or nuclear, and these, none of these technologies are really viable solutions. I mean, as to kind of dovetail on that concept, I have an article in the queue. I don't know if I've posted it yet, but it talks about how Apple was intentionally slowing down older phones to incentivize people to go buy new phones.
Really?
And so now we have, which I don't know if you're a smartphone user or not, but I am. And, you know, I just actually replaced my phone because my previous phone, which was only 2 years old, after an amazing update, the phone like was about 10% as fast as it used to be, and I'm wondering what the heck is going on here.
So we've
transitioned into an upgraded version of planned obsolescence where they just push out an update and everything starts working.
Well, it does seem to be about milking us until there's just nothing left on every level, energetically, emotionally, and, you know, financially.
Exactly. I mean, well, I think part of the agenda from a psychological perspective is what I call the rat in the cage phenomenon, which is, you know, when psychologists want rats to run through a maze or do something, one of the ways that they get them to do it is they put them in a cage by themselves. They don't feed them. So they're emotionally starved because rats are social creatures, so they like to be around other rats.
Mm-hmm.
So you starve a rat emotionally, you starve a rat of food, and you give them nothing to do besides be in a cage. And, yeah, as soon as they get into a maze, they're going to do whatever it takes to go through that maze because that's the only simulation they're going to have. And I think in a very serious and profound way, human beings are effectively like that. We're intimacy starved because of culture and various things. Almost none of us get the proper affection we need as children, and then we don't dole it out as adults, so we're all kind of affection starved. And then we're starved for deep, intimate contact as far as spiritual knowledge and exploration of ideas. So there's a lot of facets of the human organism that just aren't being used, and we're at a subsistence level, and that makes us really easily controllable because we're all kind of rats in a cage.
Right. Yeah, that seems to be what's happening.
Yeah, for sure.
So, and that article, it's coming out soon? You're going to post that one in the near future?
Yeah, I have it in the queue. I just recently, a few months ago, I was fortunate enough to have somebody who had been following my work for a long time. I put out an update asking for some assistance because I was just drowning in work and I couldn't really do any of my own creative work and analysis, which is something I really enjoy doing, and people tell me it's quite valuable to them. So
So
this person contacted me and said, you know, hey, I've been following you for years. I really like your work. I don't know what you need, but let's do what we need to do to get you the help you need. And I've been fortunate to be able to hire a colleague of mine for many years to come on board. So that happened a few months ago, and that's been really good. It's allowed me to do a lot more work originally, and that also means that I'm not so sure what's been posted anymore because I send him articles and then he posts it when he can. So I'm not sure what gets posted these days anymore.
Huh, that's interesting. So you send your articles into like a queue, and then you're not worried about some other factor post them?
Exactly. So it's kind of like a managing editor. Like, I'll go and find content. I'm the editor-in-chief. I say, okay, this article looks good. I think it's credible. The facts seem to check out.
Uh-huh.
I'll send it to my managing editor, and they'll schedule it for publishing. We have a system, our priority system, so breaking news, then we'll try to get it out immediately. If it's somewhat breaking, like we want to get it out in the next couple of days, or it may not be as critical, in which case it'll go into kind of like a bucket and then get posted when there's available slots. So that's kind of the modus operandi at this point.
What are some of the other subjects that you see coming up on the horizon, and what would you like to see?
I'm really focused about education. I think, in my estimation, is what the core problems in this world are and how can we can fix them. I think the core problem is lack of development. So we're just not developed for part of the reasons I mentioned earlier, because we've kind of got this rat in a cage phenomenon. Most people weren't given the support they needed as human beings, or whether they were children, whether they were teenagers, whether they were adults. I mean, almost everybody doesn't have the support they need. So my focus and my vision as far as what I think is really important is educating people about how they can, first of all, address those needs in a healthy way, And then secondly, begin to develop their consciousness so that they can create abundance in their lives. And then thirdly, how we as individuals can start to work collectively together on meaningful projects to help each other as individuals, but then also start to shift the planet. And, that's a lot of the stuff I've been focusing on behind the scenes. And I've also published a fair amount of articles. I just posted one recently called Where Does Wealth Come From?, which was a commentary about where wealth comes from, looking back into law, and then it was juxtaposed against NASARA, which is the big program. I actually forget. I think it's the what it stands for, but it's Reformation Act, and it's essentially it's an act that a whole bunch of farmers had sued banks for improper foreclosure. They received a massive settlement to the tune of trillions upon trillions of dollars. That was lumped together with the St. Germain Trust, allegedly. And now there is what's essentially prosperity packages that are kind of waiting in the wings to distribute a whole bunch of funds to various areas. So I took a moment to speak to where I think wealth really comes from, and that we don't have to wait for NASARA or extraterrestrials or, you know, whatever savior mean that we think is going to come. We can solve our problems now, especially when it comes to wealth and abundance, if we just start to learn together and develop trust.
Right. I remember when NASARA was a big subject about 10 or 15 years ago, and there were just people that followed it every day. They were hanging on to every last word of this person and that person, because every day it was the same story. Well, the funds are delayed a bit, and they're not coming today. Watch tomorrow, and tomorrow never came. And the fund, and then NASARA just kind of dropped off the global flat Earth. And the big thing was there was this prosperity thing that was going on about all the world being divided up, and they had calculated how much money we were all owed based upon how much was screwed out of us. And so that was a big thing. I thought, well, that sounds more promising than NASARA, but it's, you know, that was on for a bit, and then it just kind of fell off to Niagara Falls. And I don't know what, if anything, is out there. It seems like anything that hits the news gets killed pretty fast these days.
Right, right. Well, yeah, that's the kind of effect that I noticed, and that's part of the reason I wrote the article. Is what tends to happen when the dangling carrot of free money gets waved at our faces is we stop working on ourselves, we stop doing the inner work, because that's harder, and now we focus on, you know, when is the money going to come, when is the money going to come. And I noticed this happen just recently with the whole Treasury direct accounts issue. Are you familiar with that at all?
What is it?
Treasury direct account?
I don't think I am.
Okay, well, here, I'll recap it for you and the audience here.
So, okay, good.
Treasury direct accounts is it is a term that was created for a specific account. It's actually the SESTA-KV trust accounts that were created when you were born. And there's a whole bunch of value that gets placed in these accounts, and these accounts secretly underpin the financial system, and they're used throughout your life in various ways, especially when you deal with the legal system. But in any case, what the spiel was that earlier this year, a group of people who were trying to access money associated with their Social Security number found a way to use your Social Security number, which is apparently the account number of this Treasury direct account.
Huh.
And if you look up what the branch on your Social Security number, so if you pull out your Social Security number, your card, there's going to be a number right next to the code number on the back, and that letter associates with a banking region, one of the 12 Federal Reserve banks. So you can use that to go find out what your routing number for that Federal Reserve bank is, and then you can actually enter this into a bank account and make payments using your Social Security number and this routing number.
Huh.
And so the place where this money would come from was your Treasury Direct account. Well, first of all, the money that's in those SESTA KV accounts, even though we are the beneficiary, it is not ours. We have to get permission. So from a trust law perspective, you can't just summarily go in and grab something. It's kind of like, somebody bought you let's say your wife buys you a present for Christmas, and it's Thanksgiving, and you just say, well, you know what, she's the present for Christmas, I'm going to go in and I'm going to grab it now. Well, you know, that's not really kosher, is it?
No.
So that's basically where from the trust perspective, where this money comes from. And from a consciousness perspective, what ended up happening is, as soon as this news that got out where people started to seemingly access this money, which ended up a whole bunch of people got their money returned, and there's some legal issues happening with some people now, but the point I'm getting at here is that a lot of people who were doing a lot of inner work, who were educating themselves, trying to get their consciousness in order and things like this, completely put everything but to the wayside, or at least seemingly so, at the prospect of accessing this money.
So
that's what these promises tend to do, whether it's Nasara or Treasury Direct accounts or prosperity packages or whatever. The idea of free money, because we're so abundance-starved, because we have scarcity consciousness,
right,
tends to derail us and pull us out of our flow.
Right, right. Well, and then the truth of the matter is that there is nothing but abundance. And that
right. Scarcity
is just managed here on Earth just to keep us, controlled, basically.
Right.
And manipulated,
right, right,
so.
Precisely.
Yeah, no, there's more than an abundant amount. It's just that some have figured out ways to tap into it that, and then have figured out how to disallow other people from doing it.
Right. Right, exactly. And that's kind of where I was getting at with the wealth article is, I was trying to answer the question, okay, well, where does wealth really come from? Why does money even have any value at all?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I discovered is that the only reason money, whether we're talking gold-backed money or we're talking Federal Reserve notes or fiat currency or, seashells, the only reason any type of money has value is because two people agree to use it for their exchange. So there was that. And then what makes that transaction possible is trust, the fact that the two people can trust each other. So really, if we think about where all wealth comes from, all wealth, all throughout history, all throughout all the ages, always comes from trust. Two or more people deciding what they want to do, focusing together on some goal, and then realizing that goal. What comes out of that is abundance.
Well, that makes sense.
Yep. So, with that in mind, I mean, you think if we could set aside our differences, then we could really do some amazing things as far as creating abundance for ourselves. And that helps answer the question, why is there so much divide and conquer? Well, there's so much divide and conquer because if we started working with each other, we'd quickly realize we don't need the cabal's financial system, the Federal Reserve notes. We don't need prosperity packages. We don't need Nasara. We can create our own abundance right here, right now. All we have to do is get the process started.
I like that. And, some friends of mine have started in a similar direction in creating an Ubuntu ranch where the basis is energy exchange based on the Aboriginal, I think it's African Aboriginal idea of Ubuntu, which is Michael Tellinger kind of brought forth and talks about that it has to do with not using money at all. And so there are Ubuntu centers opening up all over the place, and they're actually working and figuring out how to survive without the exchange of funds. So that's a good note. It can be done. I mean, everything is energy, so it's just a matter of, people sharing things with each other and getting to, as you said, getting trust is the big thing. And the ironic thing is that we trust the very people that we shouldn't trust. People go to the bank and they say, oh, I got to get my money in the bank. Well, they trust the bank like it's, you know, the God, and that's the last place you would want to put your money, because they sweep the accounts every night, and they do whatever they do with it, and your money isn't there. It's just gone the next day, and it never goes back. So,
all right.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, sorry about that. The call just dropped there for a second, so I missed what you just said. My apologies.
Oh. I was just talking about the Ubuntu centers that are starting to crop up, where they work on an energy exchange instead of financial, you know, using money or gold or other things like that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think that is the wave of the future, is getting to an energetic type of exchange where whether it's energy credits or, you know, whether we use some type of accounting system or not, but we're moving away from, you know, a debt-based money system so that people can focus on their passions, their goals, and realize their own intuitive abilities, and then through that, they can add more abundance to the collective for everybody.
Well, you know, I agree with you, and I see in my own mind's eye that there's some major obstacles to that, and it has to do with the alien question, and for most people that's not even an option, that's not even in their mindset. But the concept that there are alien factions that actually run things in interdimensionals, and that, you know, we're just fodder for them, is kind of behind the cabals that actually run the world, the managers. And so we don't see a big enough picture. You know, we can't get out of this box of, you know, the world is this way and that way. And that's one of the problems of, you know, linear thinking, is that we limit our thoughts to what is acceptable, and that's part of the mind control that's going on. If it's not acceptable, then it's crazy. But until this grasp on collectives like the Earth Collective and, you know, other collectives, I mean, it's not just in our solar system, it's everywhere. And according to one person that I trust, the matrix itself is nine-dimensional. And it goes, you know, it includes Arcturus and the Pleiadians. And, you know, everybody's saying, oh, the Pleiadians are a family. And they're under nine-dimensional control as well. So part of the Pleiadian collective is probably in a similar place where we are. Part of the Arcturian collective would be where we are. Part of it would not be. And then that brings up the question of, where are we? You know, we're not just these bodies. We're not just souls. We're not just spirits. So, you know, part of us is in one realm and part in another. And then we have an emotional body, an astral body, and an intellectual body, and it goes on and on and on. But so it gets to be a bigger question when you factor in galactic civilizations having a hand, possibly, in our management and having this be a major concern, like a business, really. So the point being that we can think about what would be ideal all we want, and we can also use our energy to make that happen, and I encourage that. But it does seem that the powers that are unseen have an overriding control that needs to be removed somehow. And I have no idea how. I don't know the details of it. And I don't go down the rabbit hole too much anymore, but that does seem to be a major problem.
Oh, definitely. I mean, we have so many influences on us, being an enormous one, that, you know, just like you're going to solve any problem, you have to put all the pieces of the problem on the table so you can have it and do something with it. And
right.
And we can't ignore our celestial neighbor's influence on us in order to solve these problems.
And if you just take what our own government is concealing from us, that alone is an enormous amount of information that, for instance, free energy. Why are we still driving cars with gasoline? when the corporations have had free energy for decades, and they had it in Germany. What happened to the people from Project Paperclip? Where are they today? You know, and it goes on and on. So if free energy exists in many different forms, there's an obvious collusion to keep that information away from us, because that would mean the loss of trillions or quadrillions of dollars in oil money, gasoline, and this and that and the other thing. So nobody's going to upset the apple cart, and the corporations pretty much control where that cart's going, and they may dictate to the government, you know, well, you're not going to let say anything about free energy, and this person has to be killed, and that one has to be taken out. And, you know, it's really, really a crime against humanity, what's being done behind our backs and in secret, the things that the government has arranged with the aliens, for instance. That could, we could go on for weeks about that one.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, the influence is just up and down everywhere. The amount of hidden aspects to energy is just completely crippling our ability to create sustainable solutions. I mean, we were talking earlier about, you know, the flip-flopping between worst and worser, and between energy, you know, nuclear and coal and oil, and moves for everybody.
Right, right. And the way I see it, if things worked the way they would work with just humans involved, without any extraterrestrial influence, without anybody you know, playing the greed card, we would be living, all of us would be free to have all the time we want to be creative and to do things that, you know, create works of art if we wanted to, or just to do something with our hands. I mean, there's just an infinite array of things that we could be doing. But we're stuck in the rat, there we go, the rat in the cage, in the maze, and we're stuck having to have one job, two jobs to support this, to support the family, ourselves, and all of our time is spent up just trying to stay alive. And that's not the way it needs to be. It doesn't have to be like that. You know, vacuuming up the money as if, you know, there's no tomorrow. So there might be solutions.
I think there are solutions. I think there's more solutions than we're comfortable admitting. But a lot of those solutions require us to put a little skin in the game and do some work. And, you know, it's hard to do that when you feel like you're drowning. But, you know, to kind of put a positive spin on all this, because we took a little dark turn there, is
right.
is that I've studied the mind control aspect of the cabal, and I don't know if you know this, but the elite families, they practice monarch mind control programming on their own people. Their own children are inducted into this program pretty much from day one, from birth.
And, yes, I've heard about that.
Yeah, and anybody who studied this, I mean, there's several books out there, several whistleblowers out there. Jay Parker comes to mind. He supposedly is a survivor from a satanic family, a generational satanic family. There's another woman, let's see, Cheryl, name is. She came out in the 90s. I mean, there's been a bunch of people, and the things that these people report are so wildly fantastic as far as how horrible they are that, you know, a lot of people just completely deny that that's even happening. But for the moment, let's say that it is happening, and it seems to be. Why would the cabal, why would these controllers do this to their own children, do this to their own people in the organization? Well, there's a couple reasons that I've discovered. One, because the agenda is so insane that the only way that anybody could follow along with it or could follow it is if they weren't in their right mind, if their mind was basically controlled.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that is one person. Like, the power of an individual with an awakened consciousness who's truly gained competence and wisdom and done a lot of self-work is absolutely mind-boggling. And in that sense,
not only do they have to suppress the people, but they have to suppress their own family, because that's how powerful we are as human beings.
Wow.
So let me just say that again here. I mean, what that means is that the entire control system is set up to keep you distracted, to keep you dumbed down, to keep you, you know, watching Dancing with the Stars and posting on Instagram and Snapchat and playing Bejeweled and all these things, right? It's because if you worked on yourself, if you actually developed your consciousness, if you learned the law, if you learned psychology, if you learned thyself, then you would be almost unstoppable when it comes to going up against the forces of darkness. So now you can imagine an awakening population. I mean, these guys wouldn't stand a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So I think taking all that into consideration, you know, the reason the Matrix is so oppressive, the human beings, but also these extraterrestrials that are kind of falling into the trap with us here,
mm-hmm.
is because human consciousness is an amazing thing. And I personally take it as a big compliment that they've worked so tirelessly to keep me suppressed and all of you suppressed.
Mm, yes, yes. Yes, that's a really good point. And it's easy to forget that, because the most powerful, the most practical thing we can do is work on ourselves. It's not about trying to change the projection out there and protest and destroy and things like that, because that's not a practical solution. But raising our level of consciousness and awareness is a very practical solution. And also growing your heart-based truths as well, because you can't have mind without heart and compassion. So none of these things would happen if the people who did them had any feeling left or, you know, empathy for other people. So empathy and developing our feelings is also part of the process that gives us power over ourselves, and a kind of subtle power that can't be necessarily controlled or directed to use anything or to use other people for your own benefit.
Right, right. Well, yeah, our emotions are very important, and they change as we grow in consciousness. So if you study the kind of the evolution of emotions from a psychological perspective and a neurology perspective, our earliest ancestors, are the microbes, they didn't really have an emotional process per se, but the reptiles, closer to dinosaur reptiles, about 350 million years ago, they started to develop one of the first emotional centers, and the emotional spectrum was either fight, flight, or procreation. You're either having, you know, you're making babies, or you're fighting people, or you're running away from something.
Yeah.
Well, as consciousness evolved over billions or millions of years, then more nuanced emotional states started to come out. And then, you know, if you look at the higher order animals, like the more fraternal animals, like cats, herding animals, the great apes, all of their emotions are attenuated such that they develop fraternity, have compassion in a type of animal sense. So,
Yes. It seems like we've lost your cell phone for a moment. Well, we'll just wait and see if it comes back.
In my opinion, you can use both of these faculties, like you were just hinting at. You know, our empathy and our emotions are part of our consciousness. So they're kind of like the mystical side of us, that part of us that doesn't necessarily have a logical comprehension about something. We can get an intuitive insight that is felt or received emotionally. And then as we start to advance our consciousness, we can unpack that. And eventually, your emotions become like another sense. It becomes kind of like a sixth sense. You can literally start to detect things in your environment and then inform your conscious mind and your rational mind through that. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's really powerful.
Mm. Definitely, definitely. And it seems that telepathy is going to be coming back online pretty soon, because there's a huge movement to develop our telepathic skills. And I suspect that when we were originated, that we had a lot of capabilities that are not functioning as well today because of the limitations of, you know, the practicality of staying alive. But we were highly empathic and psychic and could read each other's minds and sense things. and probably move objects and maybe even walk through walls. But I think we'll all be able to do that again in the near future. I think there's going to be a reversal of, you know, the way things have been, and it will become normal to be telepathic. Can you imagine what a telepathic society would be like? Because there would be no secrets. So anybody that was running for politics, you could read their mind. And so if they murdered somebody or were thinking about doing some bad things, then they obviously wouldn't make it that far. So I think it's a great prescription for solving humanity's problems. Just develop your telepathic abilities and start communicating with each other with your minds. And eventually all these rotters that are, you know, spoiling the bowl of apples will get tossed out.
Right, yeah, definitely. I mean, in my estimation, the lack of proper communication and not having an inability not to be able to share ideas clearly with each other is a huge, huge problem. I mean, if we look to like the story of the fall of Babel, for example, you know, the story goes that the inequitous people of Babylon were trying to build a tower to replace God and, you know, go up to the heavens, and then God came down and destroyed the tower, and he their languages so that they couldn't communicate with each other. And, you know, whether that story is true or not, I'm not sure, but what it allegorically describes is what happens when we cease to be able to share ideas properly. And you know, from a law perspective, all of our problems are caused from that. Like when two people can't agree to work with each other, it's because they're not of the same mind. They haven't had a meeting of the minds.
Right.
Being able to telepathically communicate, being able to share your ideas with somebody and not have any kind of confusion or suspicion or things like that, I mean, that would help the human family restore itself almost overnight, I'd imagine, if it came online that quick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's quite possible. There are many ways that something like that could happen, and it would be quite a surprise for everybody that isn't ready for it if it did happen. But it is quite possible. I see that as a good possibility. So what
yeah,
are some
certainly.
Of the...
Actually, there's... Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you what some of the things were that you're most concerned about. I was also reading one of your posts on 5G, which is coming around the corner, which no doubt will happen. And that's yet another nail in the coffin of the human body, along with fluoride and vaccines and, you know, a thousand other things that have been fostered into our daily life. But go ahead, finish what you were going to say, though.
Well, it actually dovetails perfectly, because what I was going to mention is that into kind of global mind and telepathy, I've discovered a couple pretty important things, I think. First of all, have you ever heard of Ingo Swann before, the remote viewer?
Yes.
Worked for the Stargate project or program for the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, so the military version of the CIA. And he also worked with Stanford Research Institute, I believe, and with another man named Dr. Michael Persinger. Now, what Dr. Michael Persinger did, he developed the God Helmet. And what he was studying was what I've called spontaneous cognition. So there was a phenomenon that was really well documented back in the 1800s and early 1900s, kind of like as a novelty, where people would report having spontaneous cognition. They would be sitting quietly reading a book or something, and then they'd have a strong emotional feeling come over them of concern or upset, or maybe they'd have a vision of somebody that they know come in their mind. And in their mind, they would discover later that they either had some tragedy befall them, or they had some experience they were going through, or they maybe even died. So we have, and this was fairly well documented, there was a bunch of cases, like thousands upon thousands of cases that were recorded for about 100 years. Michael Persinger did is he took that chart and he plotted to see when the high periods of spontaneous cognition were. And what he noticed was that when he took the geomagnetic field activity, whether it was quiet or noisy, when he took that data and he compared it to the spontaneous cognition data, there was a correlation. And what the correlation was that when periods of geomagnetic activity or high geomagnetic activity, so the geomagnetic field was very noisy, then the rate of spontaneous cognition would drop sharply. When the geomagnetic field was at a state of quiescence, it was the rate of spontaneous cognition would go up sharply. What is suggested with that is that coherence of mind and body help you become more telepathic. So another little piece of data to think about with this is that the Schumann resonance, which is the electromagnetic waves or frequencies that are reverberating between the ionosphere and the surface of the Earth, those are calibrated for our brain and our heart. So when there's states of high geomagnetic activity, that frequency range is more chaotic. So we're actually out of tune with the Earth. But when we're in a state of low geomagnetic activity, it means we're in tune with the Earth. So what that means, so kind of the key to the punchline to all this is that body coherence or brain and heart coherence is a precursor to telepathic contact. Now, as a final thought on that spiel, what happens when you have a friend or a family member or a significant other that you spent a lot of time with? Well, what ends up happening, when you hug somebody for more than a minute, your brain and your heart start to synchronize, and then you start to synchronize your brain and heart with their brain and heart. So you literally start to form a coherent system. And what tends to happen with people is if you spend a long time with somebody, you start to finish their sentences, you start to have their thoughts. I mean, this used to happen with me all the time when Julian and I were together. And I'm sure anybody who's had a significant other can attest to this, you know, that you think what they're thinking is just like there's a psychic, because there literally is an electromagnetic coherence between the two of you, and now information can be shared. So I think looking to where telepathy goes, I think as if the reports of higher energy states coming into the Earth are real, and the sun is really about to go through this, what has been called a solar sneeze, and force an extreme state of coherence onto the Earth, whereby we have a type of electromagnetic greatly facilitates telepathy. And then, you know, the people who have been doing that inner work will probably have a better handle on it than the people who haven't. But this could be a very emergent reality that's coming on to us fairly soon here. So something to consider for sure.
Well, I really like that thought, Justin, that is really powerful, and it's a wonderful way to segue off the show because we're out of time. And the only other suggestion I would have would be a global hug-in, where everybody you see and meet on the street and at work, everybody hugs everybody else. Well, Justin, thank you so much for coming back.
I mean, could you imagine it? All we need is a little bit of love, right? So we just have to hug.
That's it.
My pleasure.
Well, I'll be looking for that article on the hug-in in the next few weeks. Justin, thank you so much for coming tonight, and we'll talk again and soon. Good night, everyone.